struggling with a nervous sweat that had broken out along the skin at my back. Upstairs, the doorbell gonged. Then I heard a shout of laughter from Madison. A second later, I recognized the low rumble of another voice. Tyler. I jumped up, tears burning my eyes. "I thought you'd be different, but you're just like Gavin," I said quietly. Then I turned and ran up the stairs.
"Olivia,"
he shouted behind me. But he didn't come after me, and that in itself was a slap in the face. I threw the door open and burst into the living room. Madison, Peter, and Dan turned, surprised at the interruption. Madison narrowed her eyes at me. Peter shifted awkwardly from one foot to the other, while Dan openly leered at me. "Is Tyler here?" I asked.
"Yeah, he's here,"
Madison drawled. She folded her arms over her chest and jutted one hip out. "Do you know where he went?" She glanced at Peter, who shrugged and looked away. Finally, Dan spoke.
"He probably went to find his girlfriend."
I flushed, embarrassed. I could tell he'd slid the last part in to upset me. "Oh." I chewed a corner of my cheek. I needed to speak to Tyler. We'd never really broken up. Even after Madison told me he was going to break up with me, we just didn't talk about it. But now I needed to tell him the truth. It was all going to come out anyway. Derek and me, the baby. It would be better if Tyler heard it from me. And I was sick of hiding everything. "Excuse me," I muttered. I grabbed my coat from the coat rack and let myself out. I hustled down the driveway past Tyler's red Jeep Renegade, but I didn't see him or his new girlfriend, whoever she was. I shivered. The temperature had dropped. I walked down the incline to the bridge, the dark of night folding around me. It was so black I might have fallen into the sky. The only light, the twinkling of peekaboo stars that flashed intermittently through the boughs of the evergreens. I debated for an extra second whether or not to take the shortcut through the forest. Mom wouldn't like me walking that way in the dead of night, but I just wanted to be home. So I headed over the zigzag bridge toward the inclined shortcut that led to my house. Beneath my feet, the river roared angrily. I was gazing over the edge of the bridge at the turbulence of the muddy water, which was why I didn't see them until I got to the embankment on the far side. When I looked up, there was Tyler, clasped tightly in the arms of another girl. It took me a second to realize who the other girl was, and when I did, I gasped out loud. "Kendall?" They broke apart abruptly. Kendall stumbled a little to the side, and Tyler grasped her arm to keep her from falling over. She giggled, her head lolling back for a second before straightening. It took her a long moment to focus on my face. Was she wasted?
"Oh, hi, Olivia," she slurred. "My long-lost sister."
Her eyebrows crinkled in sudden confusion.
"What are you doing here?"
I looked at Tyler. A Cheshire Cat grin was embossed on his face. I knew suddenly, with certainty, that he'd set this up to make me jealous. The idea of him going to such great lengths, using Kendall in this way, nauseated me. "Tyler, why are you doing this?" I shook my head, disgusted.
"Doing what, Olivia?"
Tyler asked innocently. I sighed, exasperated with his games. "You need to take Kendall home right now."
"What? No way!"
Kendall piped up.
"We're only just starting. Tyler rescued me from my dad's
really boring campaign dinner. Anyway, this is way more fun. She threw an arm around Tyler's shoulder and slurped messily at his neck. God, she was totally blackout. Kendall, Tyler was my boyfriend. Remember when you were at my house and I told you it was complicated? I pointed at Tyler. He's why. It took Kendall a moment to grasp what I was saying. Then her arm fell from Tyler's neck, and she stepped away from him, her eyes blazing.
What the actual fuck? Were you just using me to get at her? You fucking dick!
She shoved at him, but was too drunk to move him. He didn't take his eyes off mine.
You are seriously messed up.
She swayed on her feet.
I'm going back to the car. You better take me home.
Kendall stormed unsteadily in the direction of the Stokes' house. The silence expanded between Tyler and me like a widening oil spill, but there was nothing else to say right now. I was too furious. I brushed past him and headed home.
Olivia, we need to talk,
he called from behind me. I sighed and turned around, pulled my phone out of my pocket to check the time. The battery icon flashed at me. It was about to die, and I only had 5 minutes before curfew. I hesitated. He was right. We did need to talk, but it would have to wait. If I wasn't home before curfew, my mom would send the cops out looking for me. A wave of exhaustion crashed into me. I just wanted to go to bed.
We can talk tomorrow, Tyler,
I said tiredly. Right now, I just have to get home. And with that, I turned and walked away.
Chapter 40 Abby November. The rain had continued to fall while we were at Noah's. The pavement was slick and black, the orange orbs of the streetlights smeared against the darkening sky. The charcoal gray of evening descended quickly into the blackness of night as we drove north on I-5 toward Portage Point. Samson had insisted we leave my car at Noah's. You're in no condition to drive, she said. Parking's free overnight. We'll get your car in the morning. I wanted to argue, but something horrible buzzed deep in my head. Something like anger, only worse. Like tar seeping into my head, or a swarm of black flies feeding off my brain. My hands trembled and my breathing came fast and shallow. So I climbed in the front passenger seat. Somehow I'd missed Tyler in all this. I'd been a fool. He'd seemed so absolutely eviscerated by his loss. But I knew better than anyone that you could love someone and still hurt them. I ran back through every moment of our conversations. When he'd come to my house a couple days after Olivia's fall, then again in the school parking lot, he'd said he was at the barbecue that night and Madison had backed him up. But he must have slipped away when nobody was looking. The truth I'd missed flashed like fire at the back of my eyes. The drive home seemed to last forever and go by in a blink at the same time. We exited I-5 and wound along the sea. Night had pulled a black curtain over the sky, making the surf barely visible beyond the charcoal shoreline. Samson's phone rang, and she answered it, murmuring, "Okay," a few times, throwing a glance at me, then hanging up. "That was Gavin Montgomery," she said. "He said he left the campaign dinner early because he went upstairs to a hotel room with a waitress." "At his own campaign dinner?" "Jesus," I exclaimed. "How did his wife not notice?" "He said he wasn't gone long, a half hour, tops. When he got back, Kendall was gone." "So was Tyler. They left together. He told me to speak to his lawyer, but that's what I'm thinking. I chewed my lip. Do you believe him? We'll question Tyler and Kendall, and we'll follow up on Gavin's whereabouts. Speak to the waitress independently to verify it, but I'm sure he knows that. You all right? Anthony asked from the back seat. I'm fine, I said. I glanced back at him. I'm not sure what Gavin has to do with all this. Anthony didn't reply, but I knew what he was thinking. Maybe he wasn't involved. Maybe I'd let myself be biased against Gavin from the start. I thought hard, trying to make sense of what I knew so far, aligning the facts and making them into a coherent theory. The problem was, I had yet to piece together the facts of Olivia's fall. Samson took the next turn, her headlights sweeping across the web of sharply bending roads that followed the contours of Portage Point toward Tyler's mom's house. After a few minutes, we plunged down the steep hill that led to the Zigzag River. We careened around that last corner. And there it was, the intricate metal suspension of the Zigzag Bridge gleaming in the harsh yellow streetlights. And there, sitting on the low cement wall at the edge of the bridge's pedestrian walkway, as if he knew we were coming, was Tyler. Tyler squinted as our headlights raked across his face. Gravel pinged the underbelly of the car as Samson whipped the steering wheel to the left and skidded onto the shoulder. I heaved my door open and lunged toward the suspension bridge, vaguely aware that Anthony was right behind me. It was bitterly cold, a deep-down sort of cold that sliced into my skin. The light drizzle picked up, hurled water into my eyes as I crossed the road. Tyler was sitting on the low wall at the outermost edge of the bridge. His feet hung over the edge, but his upper body was twisted, so he faced me. I stopped, suddenly cautious. I didn't know what he was capable of. I glanced back at where Samson had parked and was calling for backup. A few feet behind me, Anthony waited. Would Tyler jump? Did I want him to? Tyler? I said. Hi, Miss Knight. His eyes were red-rimmed, inflamed as if he'd been staring too long into the dark. His cheeks glistened damply in the glow of the streetlights. What are you doing there? I asked, my voice taut and twisted, as if I had a fish hook jammed into my throat. My hands were stiff with cold. I pushed them deep into the pockets of my wool coat. My dad called, told me you guys were coming. Why don't you come over to this side? I walked slowly, cautiously toward him, my palm outstretched. A gust of wind blew across the bridge, slicing through my coat. I shivered violently and stared into his hollow eyes. Up close, he looked older, haunted. His eyes were shrunken in their sockets. His skin stretched over his cheekbones. His fair hair was plastered to his forehead in spiky little lines. Tyler ignored my proffered hand. This is where she fell. A pulse of panic fluttered in my chest, and the world spun and tilted in a dizzying distortion of time. My head thumped, and a wave of anger at my own stupidity washed over me. It was Tyler. Tyler looked out over the roiling water, and suddenly my anger turned outward, white-tipped and scorching. It launched away from me toward Tyler. He was the reason my daughter wasn't coming back to me. The urge to understand the truth warred with a sudden, all-consuming urge to push him. I hated him viciously. I felt the anger, the same red anger I'd felt at Jen, grow inside me, a balloon about to burst. I moved toward him, but at the last second I stopped. If I pushed him, I'd never find out exactly what had happened to Olivia. I needed to know what had happened that night. I needed the truth more than I needed my version of justice. I know you loved her. My voice was clear and calm, as if someone else were here in my place speaking for me, as if what he said now wouldn't crack the world in two. In the distance, the caterwauling of police sirens wailed. Tyler's mouth gave a panicky spasm. He jumped up, so he was standing on the low wall, his eyes glinting wildly. His nostrils flared. He was surrounded, with nowhere to go but over. A sense of urgency seized me. My heart drummed a desperate beat. Despite the icy cold, sweat dampened my palms. "You tried to tell me, didn't you?" The pounding of my chest launched the words from me. "The first day when you came to see me." I took a step closer to him. "I'm sorry, Tyler. I'm listening now. Come down here and talk to me. Tell me what happened." His pupils dilated to pools of black. His mouth thinned. "Please, Tyler," I begged him. "Talk to me. For Olivia's sake." And then the devastation and grief of our shared tragedy finally caught up with him. His face collapsed in on itself. Sorrow, a heavy weight that bore down on him. His shoulders hitched, and he dropped his head into his hands. A sob wrenched miserably from somewhere deep in his chest.
"She betrayed me."
The words sounded like they were pieces ripped out of his throat.
"She made me look like a fucking fool. But I swear I didn't mean to hurt her."
Tears streamed down Tyler's face. "What happened that night?"
"She called me a psycho, and I was so pissed off. It was like I was in a dream, this big red cloudy dream. I wanted to stop myself, but it felt like my brain couldn't catch up to what I was doing. And before I knew it, I'd hit her, and it was too late to stop myself. I didn't know she'd die. I didn't know."
His words faded into the wet, sucking sound of intense sobbing. The heaviness inside me became even more oppressive. "Why didn't you call the police? Why didn't you get help?"
"She's a swimmer. I saw her in the water and she was swimming and I thought she'd be okay."
More sobbing.
"I didn't know she was pregnant until you told me. I don't know, maybe she tried to tell me. But that's when I hit her and she was falling and I couldn't do anything about it."
The branches of the evergreens shuddered in the wind, long skeletal shadows skating across the dim streetlight. In my peripheral vision, I saw Anthony moving closer to me. I took the last step and reached for Tyler's hand, gently tugging him down from the cement wall. A flicker of awareness washed over me, the power I had in that instant. But I knew that the price of my justice would never be enough. Or it would be too much, depending on how you looked at it. He came easily, like a broken puppy, his shoulders slumped, his face a mess of snot and tears. He slid onto the damp walkway, his back against the cement wall, and I sat next to him. Icy rain needled my scalp, plastering my hair to my head. The damp cold crept into my jeans, spreading up through my torso, cracking my ribs open wide and exposing my heart. Samson stood within earshot, her hand on her gun holster. And a few steps closer to me, Anthony also was a witness to everything Tyler said now. "Why did you send her those pictures?" I asked.
"My friend Dan. He saw her kissing some guy in Laurelwood."
Tyler's mouth twisted.
"I couldn't believe it. I mean, my mom cheated on my dad, and then my girlfriend cheated on me. It's like a fucking movie. I thought if I sent her those messages, she'd be scared and maybe she'd, you know, come running back to me. Like, tell me she was getting them. And maybe she'd, I don't know, stay with me."
Awareness bloomed inside of me, a blaze of light shining on what should have been so obvious all along. He'd been afraid of losing her, so he'd tried to hold her tight. But in doing so, he'd pushed her away. The distant wail of police cars suddenly rushed forward. Four of them surrounded the bridge, two blocking off each end. The intermittent whirl of red and blue flashing turned the bridge to a scene of chaos.
"I'm sorry,"
Tyler sobbed pathetically.
"I'm so, so sorry."
I took his hand, my body shivering with cold. "I know." He tilted his face to mine, his eyes hollow, rain pinging off his face. Why don't you tell me what happened that night, Tyler?
Chapter 41. Olivia. October. When I got home, the house was completely quiet, the living room lamp producing a warm orange glow. A mostly empty bottle of red wine stood alone on the kitchen counter. I dumped the rest into the sink and threw the bottle in the recycling bin. I'd bet my college tuition that Mom was asleep. And once she was asleep, she was out for the night. So much for talking to her tonight. I hadn't even needed to rush home to make curfew. I tiptoed up the stairs and peeked inside her room. Mom was completely conked out, her head slouched to the side and half buried under a pillow. I crossed the room and moved the pillow so I could kiss her on the forehead. I thought about crawling into her bed and curling up next to her the way I used to. When I was little, I did it almost every night, cuddling up to her while she snored softly, especially if it was stormy or really cold. I think we both liked the feeling of having the other there. "Love you," I whispered as I switched off the lamp. Back in my room, I sat on the edge of my bed. There was no way I'd be able to sleep with all this nervous energy in me. I grabbed my phone and texted Tyler. "You're right. We need to talk. You still at the barbecue? Meet in 15? A few seconds later, my phone buzzed. "Tyler."
"Yeah. See you in a few."
I wondered what Kendall was doing. It seemed like there would be a lot of questions from people who knew me if she was at the barbecue with him. I just didn't care anymore. The battery icon on my phone flashed again. I reached for the cord at the side of my bed and plugged it in, leaving it on my bedside table. Might as well leave it here if it was going to die anyway. I slid my coat back on and crept downstairs, shutting the door quietly behind me. The night air was chilly, a brisk breeze blowing. I pulled the collar of my leather jacket up to warm my neck and ducked into the copse of woods along the back of my house. Despite the day's reprieve from rain, the ground was still slick and wet, rising unsteadily beneath my feet. I was only a few months pregnant, but my balance was totally off. I'd read online it was because all these wild hormones made my ligaments loose. It was crazy how this tiny little bean could take over everything about me. I placed my hand on my stomach and stroked it gently. There was a baby inside of me. Now that the shock had worn off, I felt in awe of that fact. A baby I already loved and would do anything for. A streetlight flickered over the zigzag bridge as I crossed it, reflecting against the metal suspension. My shoes echoed against the wooden pedestrian walkway as I moved across the bridge. Nearly on the other side, I stopped and peered over the cement barrier at the roaring river below. My earlier inertia had subsided, burning away my fatigue and filling me with an uneasy anticipation. I had a plan now. First, I'd find Tyler at the barbecue and apologize for not being honest with him. I should have told him the truth from the beginning. I thought I was trying to save him from getting hurt, but if I was totally honest, I'd really wanted to save myself. And after I spoke to Tyler, I'd find Derek. I'd been unfair to him, too, dropping the P-bomb and running away. Not cool at all. Of course it was a shock. What did I expect? It wasn't like he was going to dance for joy at being a 19-year-old daddy. But he'd come around. And if he didn't, well, at least now I knew it was better to have an absent father than a bad one.
"Hey."
A touch on my shoulder made me jump. "Tyler," I gasped. "God, you scared me."
"Sorry."
He stepped back and shoved his hands in his back pocket.
Thought I'd meet you out here.
I peered over his shoulder. In the distance, I could see his Jeep parked next to Derek's Mustang in front of the Stokes' house. The irony didn't escape me. "Where's Kendall?" I asked. "Is she at the barbecue?"
"No, she passed out in my car."
He rolled his eyes.
"She won't even remember tonight. I'll take her home later. Fucking lightweight. She has serious daddy issues."
So, I bit my lip and looked at the ground. "I just wanted to say I'm sorry. For the way things have been. You're right. I haven't been entirely honest with you, and you don't deserve that." I looked up and caught his eye. His face looked very pale under the glow of the streetlight. The faint smattering of freckles across the bridge of his nose stood out sharply.
"Dan told me,"
he said, his voice low and hard.
"He saw you in Laurelwood kissing some guy, but you wouldn't admit it. I followed you, but you were so sneaky. I never saw you go anywhere but over to Madison's. I knew Dan was telling the truth. I was just waiting to catch you."
All those times I'd felt eyes burning into my back. I'd felt the hair rise on my arms. It was because I was being watched. Tyler hadn't realized I was going to the Stokes' house to see Derek, not Madison. "You followed me?" I whispered, my voice hoarse. A dark, inexplicable unease feathered inside me. He didn't answer. I felt a thought crouching somewhere in the back of my mind. It leapt, and I caught up with the thread of possibility circling my brain. "Tyler?" My stomach twisted painfully. "Have you been sending me those scary picture messages?" His nostrils flared, and he cracked some tension out of his fingers, but he didn't answer. I backed away from him until my butt hit the bridge's low cement wall. I pressed my fingers into my eyes until all I could see were white stars bursting in front of me. How could he do something so cruel? "Tyler, why?"
"You were cheating on me all fucking summer,"
he spat bitterly. "Jesus!" My legs were unreliable, like new grass. I suddenly felt weak all over. "You're such a creeper." He glared at me from under a brow thickened with anger, his mouth a narrow slit of fury.
"I'm a creeper? You're a fucking slut, Olivia."
His lips curled into a sneer of disgust.
"You lied to me the way my mom lied to my dad. You made me look like a fool."
"I said I'm so—"
"Just stop. I don't want your fake apologies."
Rage radiated out from him in waves. Adrenaline kicked hot and silent in my blood, and I leaned away, wanting to escape the vortex of his fury.
"Who is he?"
he demanded, moving closer to me.
"Who'd you cheat on me with?"
"Look, I hesitated, glanced over my shoulder at the river crashing wildly. The wind whistled through the trees, and I shivered.
"What?"
he bristled, his lips pulled back in a snarl.
"What were you gonna say? You love him?"
He spat the word out as if it had vile connotations. I held his gaze. Madison was wrong. I wasn't vanilla, and I wouldn't be a doormat anymore. I could stand up for myself and the guy I loved. I lifted my chin and glared at Tyler. "Yes, I do love him," I said. "I'm sorry I've hurt you, and I know I should have told you sooner. I've made a mess out of this, and I am sorry. But this is it for us. I need you to accept that and stop acting crazy." His mouth flapped open, and fury rolled over his face like a tide. His eyes narrowed and glittered in the streetlight. Like a snake, he struck, caught both of my wrists in his hands and squeezed, clasping me with fists of iron. I struggled, trying to wrench myself free, but he was stronger. His face twisted into an ugly mask.
"You stupid fucking bitch,"
he hissed, spittle gathering in the corners of his mouth. A cold edge of nausea slid from my belly into my throat, and fear pinged metallic against my tongue. For the first time in my life, I was genuinely afraid of Tyler.
"Tyler, stop!"
I struggled against his vise-like grip, twisting my hands left, then right. His fingers were like steel. I could feel the soft skin of my wrists bruising, smashed between my sharp bones and his hands. My mouth went dry, and I forgot how to speak, how to scream. With one final heave, I twisted my arms from him, and his hands snapped off mine with a sickening jerk.
"Stop! You're hurting me!" "I'm hurting you?" he shrieked.
His eyes were black flecks of coal burning in his face.
"I'm hurting you?"
"You're a fucking psycho," I spat. "Fine. You want the truth. I'm..." My admission was cut off by a streak of blazing hot pain as something exploded against the side of my head. My brain barely registered the blow, my vision a dusky blur of red, pain searing into my skull and down my jaw. I felt my body spin with the force of it. I reeled backward until my legs whacked against the low cement wall and I tumbled over, my body hurtling sideways across the ledge. A dark fog pressed against my outer vision, and before I knew it, I was falling, plunging into empty space. I hit the water on my back, my eyes fastened on the bridge's lacy arches illuminated by a flickering street lamp. Then the shadowy water tipped me under. I kicked, clawed for the surface, but was tangled beneath the immense weight of the water. I didn't know which way was up, nor could I get my body to move to reach it. I tried to scream, but swallowed gulps of muddy river water instead. It burned as it slid down my throat. Water shifted around me, twisting me this way and that. I kicked hard, my lungs desperate for air. My chest felt like it was being crushed by fiery jaws. Suddenly, the water thrust my body up, and my head cracked against something hard. Pain seethed through my head, worse even than before. White light blazed behind my eyelids, and a ringing crashed in my ears, like a giant elephant thundering down the stairs. "My baby," I thought, and it gave me the strength to give one last massive kick. Fresh air burst into my lungs as I broke the surface, searing like fire across my chest. I sucked in another breath, and another, coughing and hacking as river water spewed out of me. And that air revitalized me just the ounce I needed. I kicked again and moved one arm, just one, and threw it up and over my head. My fingers sank into pebbles lining the river's edge. I did it again, pulling my body up with every last bit of strength I had until only my lower half was submerged. My face pressed into the uneven gravel, hard and sharp. I tried to lift my head, to call for help, but couldn't. A thick, rushing sound pulsed in my skull, but I couldn't tell if it was the sound of the river or came from inside my head. I spoke silently to my baby, the words my mom used to say to me when I was scared. "Whenever, whatever, I'm here forever." I tried to stay awake, but my mind was trapped beneath the weight of my skull, diving into a thick, lethargic spin toward the dark mists of sleep. It didn't hurt anymore. I was too tired to feel any pain. My eyelashes were so heavy, like sandbags were pressed against them. I wondered fleetingly if this was what it felt like when my mom slept so deeply, like the dead. And I knew that soon I'd find out for sure.
Chapter 42. Abby. February. 3 months later. I hurried from the edge of the hospital parking lot, cutting across the carpet of lawn that decorated the square in front of the hospital, along the beach road between the hospital and Puget Sound. Gigantic trees shivered in the bitter winter wind, their bare limbs clattering against each other. Inside, the sudden quiet was unsettling. I rushed to the elevator, feeling as if something terrible was waiting. Sarah was brushing Olivia's hair when I entered the room, long, languid strokes. In that moment, I loved my sister more than ever just because of how much she loved my daughter. How is she? I dropped my purse in the chair next to the door. The baby's fine, Sarah said. She's sleeping, actually. Dr. Maddox just finished the ultrasound. I groaned, disappointed. I tried to make it to the hospital in time, but the court proceedings had taken longer than expected. Tyler's parents were fighting tooth and nail for their son. I understood, but I would fight back just as hard for my daughter. For justice. The police had charged Tyler with assault causing bodily harm, a charge that would change to voluntary manslaughter when Olivia died. It wasn't a slam dunk case by any means. Proving that he'd intended to kill her when he punched her, and that the punch, rather than the fall, rendered Olivia brain dead, would be difficult. But his crime of passion meant a pregnant teenager was never coming back. He hadn't even tried to help her. Instead, he'd rushed in a blind panic back to the Stokes' barbecue and pretended he'd been there all along. He would be punished. Miss Knight? A knock sounded at the door to Olivia's room, and I looked up. I thought I'd find you here, Detective Sampson said, smiling. Her expression wasn't warm exactly, but at least the blank slate was gone. I guessed everybody had their own way of coping with the ugliness in the world. Detective Sampson, I said, rising and shaking her hand. Has something happened? We've pressed charges against Kendall Montgomery for obstruction of justice. We got access to her phone and found texts she'd sent to Tyler. She was blackmailing him. She suspected he'd hurt Olivia, so she threatened to tell the police if he said anything about her being there that night. They were each other's alibi and each other's downfall. I was glad. Kendall bore some responsibility for what had happened. We would have known the truth sooner if she'd only told us about being with Tyler that night. She thought she could use the situation to frame her dad. I couldn't fathom how much hatred she must hold in her heart for him. In the end, it turned out she was just like him. Selfish and manipulative to the core. And Gavin? I asked. After the media had caught wind of Tyler's arrest and the truth started to emerge, whispers began to swirl that Olivia was Gavin Montgomery's daughter. Once word leaked that he'd bribed the Portage Point police chief to bury Olivia's case, those whispers turned to a roar. He lost spectacularly in the election, and shortly afterward, his wife had filed for divorce. Sampson nodded. We are charging him with bribery of a public official. The Portage Point chief flipped on him right away. Montgomery could get a year or more in prison, but he'll probably get a lot less. It's a first offense, and he's cooperating with the investigation. His political career, however, is almost certainly over. I couldn't even bring myself to be pleased about Gavin's disgrace. He was to blame for a lot of things, but in the end, not for what happened to my daughter. He wasn't exactly the bad guy I thought he was. The FBI was now investigating the Portage Point police chief. They'd found out he'd taken bribes and improperly accepted gifts from numerous politicians and high-profile businessmen, He was facing charges of extortion, falsifying reports, and obstruction of justice, to name a few. "What about McNally?" I asked. Samson rolled her eyes, a complete break from her usual professionalism. He took the easy option the chief gave him and basically ignored Olivia's case. Didn't ask any questions. "I know it's no excuse, but he's going through a divorce right now, and I think he's burnt out. He won't get any big cases for a while, but it doesn't look like he was actively malicious." "Thank you," I said to Samson. "I mean it. I appreciate you working so hard on this. I'm glad we found the truth." She turned to go, but I called after her. "Samson?" She stopped in the doorway, waiting. "Did you put that note through my door?"
"What note?"
she said. Her face returned to that emotionless mask, but I saw a flicker of a smile twitch at the corner of her mouth before she pulled the door shut behind her. I turned to Olivia and stroked her hair, full of gratitude. After a moment, Sarah said what had been in the room all along. "Olivia isn't doing very well." "I know." I sighed and grasped Olivia's hand tightly in mine. "Dr. Maddox called me." I looked at my daughter. She'd changed so much in the past few months. She was pale, her skin thin, almost translucent, wrinkled as if she'd been sat in water for too long. Olivia still had no corneal reflex and didn't respond to painful stimuli. She didn't smile, didn't grimace, didn't twitch. Even though her hand was still warm in my grasp, her chest rising and falling in time with the hissing of the oxygen machine, I could accept now that she wasn't coming back. In the past few weeks, Olivia had been plagued by kidney infections caused by the catheter and recurrent bouts of pneumonia. The tube feeding her intestines to keep the baby growing had also become infected a number of times, leading to fears of septicemia. Dr. Maddox was now giving her ultrasounds daily to make sure the baby continued to grow. Tears leaked from my eyes. I watched as one splashed against Olivia's pillow. Sarah put her arms around me. I leaned my head on her shoulder and sobbed as she held me. Even in the midst of my pain, I was grateful for one thing. I'd learned to take comfort from my sister. Grief, it turned out, was easier to bear when you had somebody to share the burden with. Knowing that I wasn't alone, that there was somebody to throw me a line if I needed it, was a huge comfort. It reminded me there was life and a normal world I would one day be able to return to. "Hello, ladies," Dr. Maddox called as she bustled into the room. Sarah and I pulled apart, eyes wet, as Dr. Maddox pressed her stethoscope gently to Olivia's chest, then to the bump at her stomach. After a few minutes, she turned to me. She looked exhausted, blue half moons standing starkly beneath her eyes. She'd worked tirelessly to keep both Olivia and the baby healthy throughout more than 4 months on life support, the longest on record. I trusted her implicitly, but I was terrified of what she was about to say. "It's time, Abby." Chapter 43. Abby. February. I heard Sarah's sharp intake of breath. "Is the baby okay?" I asked. Dr. Maddox hesitated. "She isn't thriving. She hasn't grown much the last few days. Olivia has pneumonia again, and her kidneys are shutting down. Also, her blood pressure is dipping very, very low, so she isn't getting enough blood to the baby." She sighed and flipped the stethoscope over her head. It settled like a black snake around her neck. She fixed me with a solemn look as an array of emotions flickered across her face. Resignation, pity, sorrow. "We need to deliver the baby now." I exhaled hard, blowing air out of my mouth through the pursed circle of my lips. "It's too early," I argued weakly. "She's over 32 weeks now. It's a better outcome than we'd hoped. We can be optimistic about this. And now, with Olivia having so many problems, the baby's safer outside Olivia's body than inside. Suddenly there wasn't enough air in the room, my lungs sucking through narrow straws. I'd known all along that when the baby was born, Olivia would die, but somehow that knowledge didn't make this moment easier. I've given Olivia another round of steroids for the baby's lungs, and I've called ahead to make sure the OR is ready for a cesarean, Dr. Maddox said. We were just waiting for you to get here. I looked out the window and chewed my lips. A swirl of leaves spun dizzyingly past the window. The trees along the edge of the parking lot bent submissively under the onslaught of wind, and rain galloped down the windows, thrashing against the roof. I hadn't been able to keep my mother from leaving me, or my daughter, but I could hold the family I did have together. The baby had to come first now. Okay. If Olivia had taught me anything, it was that I had to let go of control. I had to release my fears of the past in order to face the future. Sometimes the rest of your life arrived by simply saying goodbye. Let's do this. Derek rushed into Olivia's room as Dr. Maddox was handing me sterile blue scrubs and a cap. His hair was standing on end, his blue eyes wide and panicked. Derek! I hugged him briefly, and he started to cry. It's okay. You made it in time. He accepted the scrubs and cap Dr. Maddox handed him and pulled them on over his clothes. I sent Anthony a text, letting him know what was happening. He was getting his mom settled into her new home at an Alzheimer's care facility today, but I knew he'd be here as soon as he could. Sarah gently kissed Olivia's cheek, then gave me a quick, hard hug goodbye, blinking fiercely. Only Derek and I were allowed in the OR. It wasn't strictly allowed, but I'd fought hard for it. I wasn't there when Olivia found out she was pregnant. I wasn't there when Tyler pushed her off that bridge. The one person she should have been able to count on no matter what hadn't been there when she needed me most. I wasn't leaving her side now. I wanted it to be the last thing I showed her, that she could count on me not to abandon her. And Derek deserved to see his daughter being born. Derek and I followed Dr. Maddox through the double doors to the operating room. When we got there, the surgical team transferred Olivia onto the hospital bed, started an IV in her hand, and adjusted the ventilator and pulse oximeter. Two chairs were set at Olivia's head, and Derek and I sat in them as a nurse pulled a wide screen above Olivia's shoulders, blocking off the rest of her body. Baby's heart rate is dropping, one of the nurses called. Will the baby be okay? Get these scrubs on me, Dr. Maddox barked. She held her arms out, and one of the junior doctors pulled the blue scrubs on her, then a pair of gloves, and she disappeared behind the screen. A few seconds later, the NICU team came, walking fast, three doctors in scrubs, flocking to Olivia's lower half. Please, baby, I pleaded silently. Please be okay. I pulled Olivia's hand to my mouth and kissed my daughter's limp fingers, struggling to catch my breath. Suddenly, everything seemed to be moving in fast forward. A monitor clanged, and Dr. Maddox cursed. Something splashed on the floor. Oh, my God, Derek whispered, his face pale as he stared at the ground. When I looked, a shiny ribbon of crimson liquid was splashing the floor. It sloshed across the papered feet of the surgeons, staining them red. I stared at that blood in horror, and I couldn't help it. I stood up, gawking over the edge of the screen. My mind couldn't seem to piece together what I was seeing. When my brain finally caught up, I saw that Olivia's stomach was a bloody, gaping hole held open by silver clamps. Blood was everywhere, smeared across the doctor's face masks, soaked into the sheet draped across Olivia's chest, dripping from the hospital bed onto the floor, and squelching under the surgeon's tennis shoes. Dr. Maddox's arms were cut off at the elbow, and it took me a minute to understand they were buried in the cavity of my daughter's belly. And then she pulled out the tiny body of a limp, blue baby girl covered in blood. Something thick and white and veiny was wrapped around her neck. A nurse from the NICU team grabbed the baby as Dr. Maddox untangled and cut the cord. The nurse rushed the baby to the warmer, rubbing her briskly with a white towel. She murmured unintelligible words, a lullaby in the baby's ear. The silence went on and on. "Come on, baby," I pleaded silently. "You have to live." Silence. The only sounds were Derek sobbing, the thud of my heart pulsing in my ears, the occasional clang of metal on metal, the squelch of feet on blood. And then, like a miracle, from the corner of the room came the thin, reedy cry of a baby. Chapter 44. Abby. February. The heart's electrical system can keep it beating for a short time, even after a person becomes brain dead. It's an amazing organ, the heart. In fact, it can even beat outside the body. But without a ventilator to keep blood and oxygen moving, the beating stops very quickly. The doctors were tying blood vessels, working to stop the blood, to sew her up. But I knew Olivia, my girl, wasn't here anymore. "We have to let her go," I murmured to Derek. He knuckled his eyes, swiped at the tears cutting his face. "I know," he replied. He took a long, ragged breath and bent over Olivia's still face. Then he did something that broke my heart. He covered my daughter's face in dozens of tiny, butterfly-soft kisses. "Goodbye, my love," he whispered. He stood then, his face a map of pain, one I could trace from the agony in his eyes to the torment pulling at his mouth. "I can't be here when they turn it off," he said. "I don't want that to be my last memory of her." A few seconds later, he was gone. In a way, he was right. I didn't want this to be my last memory of Olivia either. I wanted to think of the sweet baby powder smell of her pressed against my neck when she was a newborn. I wanted to think of her building sandcastles on the beach on a hot summer afternoon when she was a child, or smiling at me on Mother's Day when she was 10 and brought me a breakfast of runny eggs and burnt toast in bed. I wanted to think of her dancing that last day, her crimson scarf twirling around her neck, her face softened by her secret. I wanted to think of her happy and alive. But I wouldn't leave now. I stood up again so I could see Dr. Maddox. "We have to let her go," I said. Dr. Maddox stared at me, her eyes pale blue orbs above her white face mask. Finally, she nodded and murmured something to one of the other surgeons. A few minutes later, a plump, creamy-faced nurse pushed a mobile incubator to me, Olivia's baby inside. I peered in at her from my seat next to Olivia's head. She was tiny, but perfectly formed. A nasal cannula was fixed under her nose, a heart monitor attached to her chest, and two more orbs stuck to either side of her stomach. She was beautiful, tiny and pink, with her little face all scrunched up like a fist. Her movements were slow, as if she were swimming in gel. Her perfectly rounded head was soft, with fine wisps of blonde hair. Her tiny fists were curved under her chin, her petal-thin eyelids closed. Her chest moved up and down with each breath. Looking at her, I felt as if I were falling headlong in love. All the love and hope and optimism I'd tried to tamp down my whole life came flooding out. I loved her, this tiny magic being. She'd floated at the center of everything, growing into something completely unexpected. Hope for the future. Zoe. I reached for Olivia's daughter, brushed my fingertip across her rose-petal cheek. It was Greek for life. Her name's Zoe.
It's perfect, Dr. Maddox said. Her eyes behind her glasses were puffy and red. She cleared her throat and pulled her mask down, stripped her gloves off. Zoe's doing well, but we need to take her to the NICU.
Can I have a minute with her first? Dr. Maddox glanced at Olivia and hesitated. Please, I need to... Dr. Maddox held my eye for a long moment. Unspoken words passed between us. I needed to say goodbye. And to do that, I needed Zoe to say goodbye.
Okay, she said finally, but only for a minute.
The doctors detached the drape from Olivia's neck. They tossed towels onto the floor to soak up the blood. Then the room emptied, and it was just Dr. Maddox and Zoe and me. I looked around, feeling abruptly winded.
Here, Dr. Maddox said.
She carefully extricated Zoe from the incubator's tubes, nudging the white blanket up around her small head. Zoe woke briefly, her eyes flicking to see what had roused her. She yawned hugely, and the clear tube taped to the side of her face moved as her tiny mouth searched for something to suck. Dr. Maddox gently placed her tiny body in my arms. I brushed my lips across her velvety cheek, breathing her in. I held Zoe, feeling the warmth of her body curling into mine. She was so small, barely the weight of a breath. Dr. Maddox looked at me and I nodded. She bent and unplugged Olivia's ventilator from the wall. Olivia's heart didn't stop right away. Her strong, beautiful heart. A heart that had loved me so well, that had struggled to stay beating to see her daughter alive. It kept beating, but it slowed. I knew we were running out of time. I'll be back in a minute, Dr. Maddox said. She turned and left very quickly. Before I knew it, I was alone with them, Olivia and my granddaughter.
Olivia,
I whispered, wishing more than anything in the world that she could hear me. Your daughter's here. I carefully moved the tubes and lines off Olivia's body and clasped Zoe tight as I stood and laid the baby on her chest. I slid onto the bed next to Olivia, positioned her in my arms so I could hold her and prop Zoe against her. I clasped Olivia to me, feeling the sharp ridges of her shoulders beneath the hospital gown, the prominent bones of her ribcage.
We named her Zoe. I thought you'd like it.
I turned my face into Olivia's hair, hoping to catch the scent of her. But it wasn't there anymore. It, too, was gone. I had a sudden memory of her then. She was standing on the beach looking out to sea, her hair a long blonde flag behind her, her cheekbones sharp in profile. She turned to me and caught my gaze, trapped it for a fleeting moment in hers, smiled. A soft smile, the kind you give somebody you know by heart. Zoe mewled softly and nuzzled into the crook of Olivia's neck.
She knows who you are,
I marveled. Maybe it's possible to remember your mother from the womb, just for those first few moments. Maybe you remember her smell, or something less tangible, the sensation of swimming inside her, the familiar cadence of her heart pulsing against your ear, the sound of your shared blood powering its every beat. I tightened my arms around them both. Zoe started making tiny baby noises, and I thought she would cry, but she didn't. Her lids bobbed closed, open, then closed again, and she drifted asleep, her mouth hanging open. Olivia took a ragged breath, but it stuck somewhere in her chest. A sob wrenched out of my throat.
I wished I could do it all over again. Go back in time and be a better mother. But there are no redos in life. You can't go back and make things better. All you can do is live with it and move forward. I looked at Zoe, asleep on Olivia's chest, and I was whisked back in time to the morning Olivia was born. I zoomed in on a memory of how my hands dwarfed Olivia's tiny body, how well she fit in my arms, the love that overwhelmed me just at the sight of her. They say time goes by fast, but really it was a blink. Every single second between then and now, just a blur. I stroked a hand across Olivia's cheek. It didn't feel soft anymore. Instead, it felt thin, papery. Whenever, whatever, I'm here forever, I said. And suddenly I understood what my mom was saying that last day. She was saying goodbye. And in her goodbye, she was promising she'd be here, inside of me. Zoe opened her eyes. Her gaze collided with mine, and she gazed at me seriously, the way only a baby can. I studied the smooth contours of her cheekbones, the delicate line of her brow, the slope of her tiny nose. She looked so much like Olivia did as a newborn, it hurt. But it was also kind of nice, like Olivia hadn't really gone, in a way. Or maybe, just like Zoe was a piece of her, she'd left behind. From Olivia's bed, I stared out the hospital windows toward the sea and watched the sunset, a trickle of light receding in the distance. Suddenly the sun met the horizon, momentarily washing the room in a dazzling display of gold. It reminded me that the first hour of every new day starts with darkness, and then the sunshine comes. And right then, in my arms, pressed against the tiny, warm body of her daughter, Olivia took a ragged, uneven breath, her last. I like to think she left on the wings of that sunbeam, dancing the way she did on that last day, flying away, free. Chapter 45. Abby. Epilogue. A few months later, when the spring air was just starting to warm, Anthony, Sarah, Derek, and I took Zoe to the cemetery hill where we'd buried Olivia. I could have come alone, but Olivia wouldn't have wanted that. Maybe I couldn't save Olivia, but I realized now that I could save myself. I could learn to open up to love and second chances. I could be better at that. Zoe was strapped in a baby carrier across my chest as I walked. She wriggled and kicked, her whole body vibrating with happiness. You'd never guess she'd been born prematurely after her mother spent months on life support. She was the picture of health, perfect and whole. The sky above us was a vivid blue, with cotton ball clouds floating lazily, the grass a carpet of vibrant emerald. In the distance, the sea was a shimmering expanse of blue, white swells cresting, then rolling in to crash against the rocks. When we reached the granite headstone, marking where Olivia slept for eternity, I unstrapped Zoe and propped her on her tummy on a waterproof pink blanket. I inhaled deeply, complex emotions braiding my stomach. Anthony wrapped his arms around me from behind and held me tightly, took all of my sadness and fear and anxiety and held them so that just for a moment I wasn't the only one carrying their weight. I looked up at him. He'd recently cut his hair into a short, spiky do and shaved his face. When his bright eyes met mine, my heart gave a little skip. I smiled and lifted my face for a kiss. He seemed a lot less frazzled since he'd moved his mom into the home. He had regular visiting hours where he'd take her for long walks or just to a cafe to sit and be together. And he didn't have to worry anymore about whether she'd set the house on fire or get lost roaming the streets. I didn't know what our future held, but I did know I trusted him. was letting myself trust him in a way I hadn't done in a long time. I leaned my head back against Anthony's chest and remembered the day he'd shown up at my house with an espresso machine. Zoe had only just come home from the hospital a few days before, and I was exhausted. I'd looked at the espresso machine and knew it was a gift with a meaning. "I have a lot of baggage," I warned him. He carried the box to the kitchen and put it next to the microwave. "I'll help you carry it," he replied. He pulled the machine out of the box and plugged it in with a flourish. "Voila," he smiled. "Caffeine. I have a baby. I love babies." He crossed to me and took both my hands in his, smiling gently. His eyes were a vibrant, pale green as they caressed my face. "One step at a time, okay?" We formed a loose semicircle around Zoe, facing Olivia's headstone. It was the first time we'd all come together to see Olivia. The first of many, I was sure. And next time, Madison would be here. That's what we were hoping, anyway. The poor girl still hadn't forgiven herself for her last words to Olivia being cruel ones. "Why didn't you tell us?" I'd asked her later. "If you knew Derek was the baby's father, if you knew they were together, why didn't you tell us?" "He's my brother," she said simply. "Even when I hate him, I love him. I wanted to protect him." I sensed Olivia would have forgiven Madison. Family, after all, was the most important thing. Family was proof that love existed. Zoe kicked gleefully and let loose a delighted baby shriek. Derek picked her up and nuzzled her nose. He was an excellent father, around as often as he could be, despite being at the University of Washington throughout the week. We'd decided Zoe would stay with me. After Derek graduated from college and had his own place, she'd spend weekends with him. For now, Jen, Sarah, and I shared childcare. Sometimes, worry and anxiety slipped in like an old friend, fear that I'd lose her. But I pushed it away. To feel love was to feel fear. You just couldn't let it dictate your life. Love was a risk, but it opened up a world of possibility, one you would never experience without it. I'd never understood that before losing Olivia. Olivia's daughter was loved. That was the most important thing. I looked at Zoe in her father's arms. She was a miracle. Every night when I rocked her to sleep, feeling the weight of her little head resting gently in the crook of my neck. Every morning when she saw me and her face broke into a gummy smile. Every time I held her bottle in her rosebud mouth and she gazed at me with absolute trust and adoration, she helped push some of the grief aside. I took comfort in knowing that, although nothing would ever make up for losing Olivia, I had more than just a memory of her in Zoe. We'd all brought something for Olivia, and one by one we set our tokens against her headstone. Me, Zoe's hospital baby bracelet. Anthony, a single white rose. Sarah, a stick of cinnamon gum. And finally, Derek stepped up. "I didn't bring you anything, Liv," he murmured softly. "But I brought this for our daughter." His voice was thick, gravelly, as if it hadn't been used in many months. He was different now, thin as a rake in his skinny blue jeans, his face almost as white as his t-shirt. His eyes were hollowed out by grief. I thought about the future he'd now face without Olivia in it, the future we'd all face. He settled Zoe in my arms, then reached inside a large plastic bag and pulled out a framed picture, setting it on the ground in front of Zoe and me. It was a charcoal sketch of Olivia. In it, my daughter came to life. The tilt of her chin, the spark in her eye, the tug of a smile on her lips. She was looking at the artist, and I could see what she'd been feeling in that moment, cracked open wide and on display for all to see. Love. I moved Zoe to my hip and knelt to trace my fingers across the portrait. "Did you draw this?" He nodded. I thought, Zoe... He stopped, raw heartache playing across his face. It's beautiful. I'll hang it in Zoe's room. On the horizon, the sun burst out from behind a collection of clouds, painting the sky gold. I looked around at my family. Never in a million years had I thought it would turn out this way. I closed my eyes and let the grief wash over me, let the bitter sting of loss clutch at my bones. What followed was a release, not just of grief, but of gratitude, too, of what Olivia had given me, both in life and in death. One of my tears splashed onto Zoe's cheek. She blinked, startled, and reached for my chest. I pulled Zoe close, breathed in her scent, and whispered in her ear, "Whenever, whatever, I'm here forever."
The Night Olivia Fell was written by Christina McDonald and read by Kelly Burke and Laurel Lefko. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Night Olivia Fell is available in print from Gallery Books.